From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you, and by support from the Central Indiana Community Foundation, the Indiana Arts Commission, a state agency, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll chat with Gregory Hancock about his upcoming dance production featuring the Naptown Roller Girls.
And I get to meet a barbershop quartet chorus.
Plus, we'll have a preview of the upcoming Fringe Festival. And of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All this and more right after the latest news from NPR. Imagine Juliet and the Capulets in roller skates, Romeo and the Montagues in platform shoes, add some Donna Summer and a mirrored ball, and what do you get? The Gregory Hancock Dance Theater's Romeo and Juliet at the Disco, of course. Travis DiNicola spoke with Gregory Hancock, as well as dancers Heather King, who plays Juliet, and Martin Casanova, who, appropriately, plays Romeo.
Gregory, let's just start with, where'd the idea come from in the first place of taking them to the Disco?
Well, I think I kind of have a history of taking classical stories and setting them in unconventional settings. Mm-hmm. So I had wanted to do a production of Romeo and Juliet for quite a while, and I thought, what could be more unconventional than setting them in a disco and with 70s music? So we
You've never done Romeo and Juliet before.
We haven't.
That's actually kind of surprising. Yeah. I figured at some point you would have hit this one.
We're
by
just
now,
kind of waiting for the right timing, the right cast, the right setting, the right idea, the right, right creativity. So here it is.
Okay. Yeah. So it's at a disco. Is this a 70s disco?
It's a 70s disco.
It's a 70s disco. Yeah. And, you know, for those listeners who may not be familiar with Gregory Hancock Dance Theater, you are it's a dance company, but it's very theatrical dance.
Right, right. We are called Dance Theater. We do a lot of story ballets, pieces that are having more of a story. We also do abstract works, but quite often bigger story ballets even.
Very narrative-based.
Yes,
And so in this one, we have, of course, Romeo and Juliet. Juliet?
Yes.
Heather King, it's great to have you on Art of the Matter. Tell me about this role, your Juliet. Have you ever danced a Juliet before?
I never have, and I'm very excited about this. You know, what little girl doesn't dream about being Juliet?
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And so it's a beautiful role, and as Gregory said, it's quite a bit different than the traditional Juliet. I actually am on skates for part of it, for our roller disco section, and it's just a lot of fun. It's super high energy, and I'm just thrilled to be Juliet.
Well, you mentioned the skates, which we're then get to in just a moment, but before we do, I have to ask our Romeo, Martin. You don't actually get to be on skates. Or do you?
I do.
Later on.
Yes, I do.
Okay. You don't start out on skates, though.
No. The whole premise of our story is that the Capulets are always on wheels.
Mm-hmm.
So the Naptown Roller Girls are joining us for this performance, and they are the Capulets. And then later we have a moment when we come together, and we decide to we want to be part of each other's families,
mm-hmm.
and I want to put on skates, and then she decides to put on platforms, and then we come together, and we've somehow crossed our wires, and it doesn't work out. So, but yes, we both are on skates at one point or another, and it's very, very fun and very energy.
So, platforms. So the Montagues are on platforms?
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah.
The Montagues are the boogie shoes, and the Capulets are the are the rollers.
The roller boogie.
Yeah.
Gregory, are you a fan of the Naptown Roller Girls? I mean, where did this idea come from to bring them on?
I have become a fan of the Naptown Roller Girls. I started going to their bouts, and while we were working on the piece and thinking about the piece, and we just thought, wouldn't that be great fun to have them in this piece with us and add a little bit of roller disco to it, which is actually new and different for them, too, because what they do is not roller disco.
And
you
it's not choreographed.
No, it's not at all. So this has been, like, challenging and interesting for them, too, and very much fun. So
now the Naptown Roller Girls, they're not playing. Are they more sort of a chorus in the production?
They are.
So they're not playing major roles.
As Martin mentioned, they're kind of the Capulet family.
Yeah.
So you know they're an ensemble piece, but they're a very integral part of the whole ballet. So
now will they be in their Naptown armor, or are they wearing their costumes appropriate?
They're discoed out.
They're disco out. Okay.
Hair and everything. You know.
Okay. Fabulous.
Yes. They are doing so great. They're learning, you know, roller boogie tricks and things like that. So everybody's going to be so surprised and enjoy it.
Well, this is great. For people who may not be familiar with the Naptown Roller Girls, their general season goes from January through midsummer. So they're kind of in their off season right now.
Right. So it's perfect timing.
Great timing for them as well. And I'm sure you'll get a lot of roller derby fans to check them out. Tell me some of the names of some of the girls who are going to be participating. I think you said there's about maybe, 10 or 11?
We have 11 of the girls. Hopefully I can remember most of the names, and Heather and Martin can help me as well.
Mm-hmm.
We have Racer X and Jane Eyre and Sweet C and Katja Lookin, Fire and Brimstone, Daisy Disaster.
Misunderstood.
Of course.
Who else do we have? Joni Gouge.
And these are all their bout names.
Blue
Messiah.
Blue Messiah. Mm-hmm.
Right. And Joni Gouge actually has some ballet training from way back in the day.
Yes.
So it's kind of exciting to have a ballerina on. Roller skates.
Very cool. How very fun. The visuals that I'm imagining are just going to be fantastic on stage.
Yeah, I mean, the whole production is about a big visual, about the costumes, the lights, the movement.
The disco balls, the roller skates.
Mm-hmm. I mean, everything. And it's such a fun piece, although it is Romeo and Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
But it stays very fun and very campy, if you will, even for quite a while, until right towards the end. And then there's kind of a tragic turn, which actually is an interesting social commentary about the 70s as well, because there was all this fun and frivolity going on, but there are consequences to that sometimes. So there's kind of a double-edged meaning in the piece as well.
And there's dialogue in this?
There's not.
There's no dialogue.
So
it's all told through just the movement
through
the music.
Exactly.
What sort of music are you using for this?
Almost every disco song you could imagine.
Yeah.
It's a whole montage, which Heather has worked great on putting all this music together. She's kind of, her and her husband,
give me some highlights,
our sound.
Oh, my goodness. We've got Xanadu. We've got Boogie Oogie Oogie. We've got Disco Inferno. Yeah, seriously, there are just, I think we maybe use 3 songs in their entirety. Everything else is just clips of songs, and it's really great how they're woven together to tell the story. We use, like, just pieces, certain lyrics of certain songs that actually describe what's going on.
It's very Moulin Rouge-esque.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. Okay. So now for both of you, being dancers and trained dancers and then having to take that on skates, that had to be a little bit of a challenge, I would think. Mark?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it is, but I couldn't think of two better people that are more gung-ho to do it than us, because we were just so excited to do it.
Yeah. These are four-wheel skates, not inline.
Yes, they're quads. Yeah,
quads. Traditional quads. So, Heather, how is it dancing around on skates?
Well,
do you have
toe
stops?
Yeah.
Okay.
And,
toe stops.
I bet you love the toe stops.
Yeah, so we're doing some rolling and some different promenades and things like that on the toe stops. So, yeah, we're using every part of the skate, and of course, because it's a lot of partnering and things like that, so it's very interesting to see, you know, what all can be done on skates. So
I'm sure you must be sort of discovering choreography as you're rehearsing it.
Exactly.
And so there's got to be, of course, you know, a great fight scene at some point in this. That had to be a challenge, I would imagine. Tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, of course, there's the big, you know, battle with where Tybalt is killed and Mercutio is killed. But as I mentioned, we do that in a rather comic way. I don't want to give too much away, but it's really quite comic and entertaining. But again, with the roller girls involved, with a big cast of dancers involved, I mean, it's pretty exciting. And
again, this is at the Pike Performing Arts Center, which is, you know, hats off to them for letting you skate on their stage.
Yes.
August 14th and 15th. There's also a silent auction involved. What's
that
about?
Our annual silent auction every August at our concert. We have this annual silent auction, so a lot of great items. People can come early and bid on some items and help the company out. And
what type of stuff do you have, like?
Well, we have, like, all kinds of different packages, massages, beauty salons, restaurant tickets, coupons. coupons, theater tickets, sporting events, you know, all kinds of things. So.
Yeah. And speaking of audience things, we are asking the audience to come dressed up.
Well, I was wondering.
Yeah.
It's kind of tempted, I was thinking.
Oh, yeah. We want the whole thing to be a real party atmosphere, front to back. You know, walking in, we're going to already have music playing in the lobby, and we're encouraging people to sing along, you know, because everybody knows these songs.
And dance along, too. We want people to dance along, stand up. We kind of have the thing, if you want to watch the show, you need to go to the balcony. If you want to participate in the show, stay on the main floor.
Seriously?
Yeah, really, really.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
We want people up in the aisles dancing and,
Great.
So it's going to be a big party.
A big party.
A big party.
Travis DiNicola with Gregory Hancock, Heather King, and Martin Casanova of the Gregory Hancock Dance Theater. Their production of Romeo and Juliet at the Disco takes place on August 14th and 15th at the Pike Performing Arts Center. You can get more information at GregoryHancockDanceTheater.org, and that's spelled T-H-E-A-T-R-E, GregoryHancockDanceTheater.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
What if you took the amazing four-part harmonies of a traditional barbershop quartet and multiplied them? Well, you'd have the Circle City Sound Barbershop Chorus. Since 1948, this dynamic men's chorus has been entertaining audiences of all kinds, as Sharon Gamble found out when she talked with conductor Gary Texera and marking director Randy Freeman.
All right, when most people hear barbershop, they think of a quartet. How did it become a chorus? Where do we start here? And Randy's going to field this one.
Well, we have a society, the International Barbershop Harmony Society, and when the society was formed, as men gathered together in large groups, of course there were quartets that came out of the chorus, but I think the chorus was basically the first form to continue to keep this barbershop harmony style of music alive. And it was actually formed, in the beginning it was called the Society for the Preservation and the...
Yeah, the Slip Squiz Squiz, the acronym nobody could pronounce, but it was really long and cool.
It's been changed since then, but it was the Society for the Preservation and Encouragement of Barbershop Quartet Singing in America. And because there were a number of guys that got together, of course, natural that guys who love to sing are going to end up singing in a chorus together.
Yeah, absolutely. We take us back because it just occurred to me, I really don't know why a barbershop quartet is called a barbershop quartet, or what the why do we call this style of beautiful close harmony? How did it get affiliated with barbershops?
Well, back in the day, back in 1920s, 1930s, they were barbershop quartets that would... there was no written music, and so what they would do is get together and just harmonize. And that's where the term barbershop quartet came from, is because that's where men would congregate.
That's where you'd find guys hanging
that's
out.
That's where they congregate in the barbershops. And so they would just, someone would start a melody, and another two, three guys would just harmonize with it, and that's how it evolved into what it is today.
How did each of you get, what was your first exposure? Do you remember the first time you heard this style of singing? Gary, do you remember?
Mm-hmm. Mine, I was 12 years old, and a neighbor two doors down and his dad actually were members of the Pasadena chapter, which had a long history of putting on really big gala shows with all the top quartets and everything. And they asked me if I wanted to come. They asked my parents, and they said, well, sure, that's better than him running around on the streets or whatever, you know.
Were
and,
you already singing in, like, in school?
No, no, I just had started finding out that I did have a voice at that point. None of my family sang. One of my sisters sang in choir in high school, but I just had learned that, and they asked if I wanted to come sing, and I said, well, I'll try it, and I was hooked.
And at 12,
doing it ever since.
At 12, had your voice changed yet?
No, I was singing tenor. I still sing tenor today, although it's taken some adjustment as far as, you know, where I place things and things like that. So,
sure.
And the voice did change. But it was funny, at the time in high school, I sang bass in the choir and in the chamber singers because they didn't have a lot of basses. And I had that range, but the director at the time knew I could sing tenor also. And so when he needed a more on a note, on an alto note or a tenor note, he would have me just sing that line in that other part. And then I just switched back to bass.
Oh, man.
So,
boy.
I was kind of his utility player.
Sweet.
A virtuoso.
I guess. Switching back and forth between that high-head voice and, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, Randy, how did you get hooked?
I wish that I had been introduced to barbershop at a much younger age, but unfortunately I found it in my 40s. My son was high school. Well, relatively. My son was in high school, and the music educator just happened to be the director of the chorus, and he got my son involved in a boys' quartet, and then he brought the boys down to sing for the chapter members. And I wanted to hear him sing naturally in his quartet, so I came along with him and then heard them sing. But when I heard the chorus sing for the very first time, I had not heard a barbershop chorus before. I got hooked that night, and I was back to the next meetings and became a member of the society, and I've been a member since.
So for somebody who's only heard, that sounds diminishing, and I don't mean it that way, but who has heard a quartet, what is the experience of hearing the whole chorus like? Is it, and how would it differ, a little technical question here, how would it differ from going to hear, say, a more mainstream chorus? Other than the fact that a mainstream chorus has women in it, but
more classical,
type
of thing. It's very different because what we do with the four-part harmony with the men's voices is it's a much fuller sound, much more resonant, and we use a very performance-friendly attitude towards our performances, where we don't just stand there and sing like a choir. We do a lot of moves and choreography, and very much into what happens from the neck up.
Mm-hmm.
So when the audience looks up there, they not only can hear the message of the song, but they can see it. And that's something we work on constantly, so that it's more than just a choir standing there with books or, you know, that type of thing.
So you need a voice, but you need a personality, too.
Absolutely. We're big on that.
Okay. What is the core repertoire for the chorus?
Well, our core repertoire, we just did a show, the one before this year, we did a show with songs from, like, the 60s.
Mm.
And so the theme of the show was Laugh-In meets Barbershop. And so we did a lot of the cornball jokes and, you know, the whole nine yards, and had the joke wall, you know, the people coming out of the wall from the old Laugh-In show. But we did songs like, you know, Happy Together, With a Little Help from My Friends, Yesterday from the Beatles. Just a whole variety of 60s music, plus sprinkled in there some, you know, more traditional barbershop songs and things like that.
Now, so, I have to ask an age-related question. Randy and I are old enough. Although we were small children in the 60s, we remember that music probably.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Gary, you are not old enough to remember
that.
Yeah,
but I always said I was born too late.
Ah.
Because that's the music that I love. I mean, 40s, 50s, 60s, 30s. I mean, I've always been a fan. I've always listened to the older music,
mm-hmm.
and just loved it. The you know, the classic singers, the crooners, you know, the Frank Sinatras, the Nat King Coles,
yeah.
and that's the stuff that I love. You know, I only spent 2 years in the 60s, so, you know, but I love the music. Absolutely.
Imprinted on you in the cradle, we'll just say it.
Absolutely.
That way. And you know, it's interesting. Sometimes I think as listeners, we kind of push the whole barbershop sound over into a corner and think of it as very specialized music. Mm-hmm. But if you think, just thinking about pop music from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, you think about Simon and Garfunkel, the Beatles, the Eagles, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying they're singing barbershop style, but the close harmonies, the Mamas and the Papas, some of the 60s music we were just referencing, shares a lot in common with the style of music we're talking about.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It lends itself to our style. Mm-hmm. Because our style has evolved into more of a pop style over the last, say, 10 years, mm-hmm. a lot of quartets are taking standards and familiar pop songs and actually having them arranged in four-part harmony to actually do in competition.
Oh, really?
Which was frowned upon, you know, frowned upon probably, you know, 10, 15
but
years ago.
But it's evolved some.
We knew that as a society, in order for us to not die out, we had to evolve.
Right.
And so they've opened up the umbrella, so to speak, so that we can incorporate those songs to attract a younger audience and a younger membership. And so that's something that's happened in the society that's helped tremendously.
And we do focus on youth. We have a program called Youth in Harmony to educate young people.
And I've noticed, I've been on your website and seen a photo of the whole chorus, and there's quite a broad range of ages there, which is heartwarming, actually.
Yeah, getting younger all the time. We've had some recent guests that have been, you know, 16, 17 years old. Mm-hmm. A couple of 11, 12-year-olds are actually getting on board now. Their parents are excited about them singing and something positive.
A young man in my quartet, Timeless, is 15, or tenor.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What's the audition process like?
Pretty simple.
It's pretty straightforward. Yeah. If you can carry a tune, and to be a member of the chorus, you need to be able to sing. But if you come on Monday nights to our rehearsals, you get free voice lessons. And Gary is a great teacher.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah. They have improved tremendously. When I first started directing them,
which was how long ago?
A little over 2 years ago.
Newish.
Yeah, a little over 2 years ago. They were at a certain level, you know, very good average chorus.
Mm-hmm.
I've been involved with a chorus in the California called Masters of Harmony. They've won the international championship 7 times now. Mm-hmm. They have over 120 members. And so I got a lot of good training there, and I also sang in a quartet in 2004 that won the international championship.
Wow.
So I've been around the hobby a long time and, you know, always strive for the best.
Seen all its permutations.
So I push them pretty hard, having a good time along the way, of course, having fun. But I really challenge them to be much more conscientious of how they sing and the way they approach the voice and support and everything, and they've come full circle in 2 years.
How many quartets are there within the chorus?
We have about 4 active quartets that are within the chorus. Most of them are we would call a chapter quartet, where the members come from our chapter, but we also draw from other areas.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, you might have someone from Terre Haute or someone from Bloomington or Muncie that would also come to Indianapolis to sing with guys in a quartet.
And what's sort of the push-off point or the genesis of a quartet? Is somebody's particularly interested in a certain era and says, I want to sing with you and you because you like the same era and we have the balance of voices here? Or how does it happen? Is there something more organic about it?
A couple times during the year, we have contests. We'll have a spring contest and a fall contest. And when you're in the barbershop community, you meet a lot of other barbershoppers.
Sure.
And so you'd have an opportunity to meet with guys from other chapters. We have their special events that go on. Guys gravitate toward each other. I was very fortunate in that the formation of my quartet was 4 guys that are actually in the chapter and involved on a weekly basis. And that's nice because we all live close to one another. But that's not always the case with quartets. There may be someone from Missouri who sings with someone from Indiana who also has someone from Ohio in the quartet.
Wow.
It's possible to have long-distance quartets like that.
Give me a context nationally. How many quartets are there? How many quartet singers? How many choruses?
Oh, my gosh. There's thousands of quartets. At the international contest, they have preliminary contests in the different districts worldwide. There's groups in Sweden, Germany, Australia, New Zealand, Russia,
Japan.
Japan.
Wow.
It's spreading all over the world, and it's truly an international society. And what happens is they have these preliminary contests where there's anywhere from 20 to some districts, 40 quartets that compete against each other to get a certain score to qualify for the international. And at international, there's 54 quartets that actually compete in that contest.
We just came from international. It was in Anaheim, California last week, and Gary was able to be there.
Yeah, it was wonderful. Quartet I sang with ended up 17th. We were called TKO, which was good for us because that was our goal.
TKO for total knockout?
Yeah, exactly. Or technical knockout.
It.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yep.
Is there new music? Obviously, there's a lot of arrangements. We've talked about that. But is there brand new music being written for quartet?
Not generally. Not generally. Most of the time, it's a song that they'll find
know.
And they'll, it's familiar that people know, and then they'll commission an arranger for anywhere from $600 to $800 to do an original arrangement for that group, and it makes it sound like a new song.
Sure.
Because it's a different treatment of an old melody or what have you, and it just it makes it fresh, and it's one of the things that quartets strive to do is do their own flavor, their own identity, so that they don't sound like every other quartet.
Brandy, what's your all-time favorite quartet song?
Quartet song?
Mm-hmm.
Well, right now, of course, I'm not as experienced as Gary. Even though he's younger than I am, he's got more years under his belt. Mm-hmm. But right now, one of my favorite songs is Yesterday I Heard the Rain. It's a ballad, and my quartet has done it, and our chorus has performed it. And it's just a lot of fun, and there's a lot of emotion in the song, and it's a song I can really connect with and perform.
Gary, all-time favorite?
Oh,
I know,
man.
All your children are pretty.
that is a tough call. I have many. One of the songs that my chorus sang was an adaptation of an older song called What More Can a Woman Give, and an arranger by the name of Robert Rund changed it so that a male quartet could sing it, and What More Can a Soldier Give?
Ooh.
And it talks about a soldier that passed on and talking from the grave, saying, what more can a soldier give than his life and his, joy and everything else to his country because of that pride. And we sang that in contest, a quartet that I was in called Gotcha. And we sang that in several contests, and every contest we sang it in, it was an instant standing ovation and just very emotional. Tough to get through.
Sure.
Because you get into that mode and you just have to fight back going over the top. But that's probably one of my all-time favorite songs.
Sharon Gamble with Gary Texera, conductor of the Circle City Sound Barbershop Chorus, and Randy Freeman, their marketing director. If you are a man who's interested in singing, drop in to one of their Monday night rehearsals at 7 p.m. at Christ Lutheran Church, 345 North Kittley. You can hear them perform at the Feast of Lanterns on Saturday, August 29th at 5 p.m. in Spades Park. That's at 1800 Nolan Avenue.
It's your deep fried Oreos over here. Deep fried Pepsi balls at our booth. I got deep fried pizza over here. It's healthy. Hey,
Sharon?
Travis.
Wow.
Who are all those deep fried vendors in the background?
I bet you could get a job as a deep fried vendor, Sharon. Offer up a little deep fried radio, a little deep fried theater, and some deep fried beers. And
I think we might have a deep fried arts calendar.
I think we will. We'll have a deep fried arts calendar that we'll call
What Do
We Do? Wow, it is that time again, isn't it?
It's that time again.
Okay, well, we will be your guides to on our What Do We Do calendar. Just to give you some hints, if you are going to the 153rd Annual Indiana State Fair,
it's longer this year.
It is longer. It never ends.
You can eat even more fried food.
you can check out. There's actually some really neat performances going on. I'm going to focus today on the Pioneer Village.
Cool.
Because they've got a whole bunch of music and storytellers and stuff all throughout the fair, starting this weekend. Pretty much every single day, you've got everything from people out there like Mac Bellner and her friends doing their traditional American music. There's performances almost each day, starting at like 10 a.m. and going to about 1, then picking up again around 2, going till 5. There's the Last Drop Jug Band coming up on Tuesday, like the 18th of that. There's stuff before then. You've got a group called Second Fiddle, which of course it isn't. Music of the Celtic Isles. There's the Bluestone Folk School of Noblesville is performing one day. The Fret Set, old-time fun music. Good frets, like, you know. But, yeah, I love it. Yeah, Last Drop Jug Band, that's music from the 30s and 40s. The Johnson County Folk Music Society. And pretty much any day you go there, you're going to get some great, like, traditional music, folk music, stuff like that. And, again, all on the Pioneer stage throughout the entire festival.
That sounds like so much fun. And if while you're out there between attending all those performances, you do eat one too many deep-fried delicacies, because, of course, one of the fun things about going to the State Fair is having some dining delights at lunch or dinner or whenever, here's something you can do to burn off some calories. The Historic Landmarks Foundation is offering free downtown walking tours of Monument Circle through October 25th, and you can get the full schedule at historiclandmarks.org or more information there. But you can find out cool things, like there was a Monument Circle landmark that once had an executive putting course on its roof.
Really?
Yeah.
How fun.
I don't know the answer to this. I have to go on the tour to find out. You can also find out why the figure on the top of the Soldiers and Sailors Monument faces south. Do know the answer to that. But these are free one-hour walking tours that will tell you the story of Monument Circle and its landmark architecture. Again, more information at historiclandmarks.org. Oh, and the tours depart from the Borders Cafe at 11 South Meridian Street.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, of course, there are a lot of shows that open up on the first Friday of the month that will be open throughout the month. One of them that if you're out tonight listening to us on Friday night, worth checking out, or if you're listening on Saturday, can still go by, the Art Bank. If you've never been there, it's a really interesting gallery at 811 Mass Avenue, just a little bit east of Masson College. It's an old bank, actually. In fact, it was a bank that John Dillinger held up, and now it is an art gallery, and featuring the work of painter Travis Little. No relation, that's the first name, Travis Little. I'm Travis Tiancola, but I thought, you know, what a cool name this person has. So Travis Little is, in fact, an American contemporary realist painter graduating from Ohio, and lives in Carmel now, and is showing his work, photorealistic sort of mixed media paintings and illustrations at the Art Bank through the rest of the month.
Excellent. If you have ever gathered all your belongings and needed to change your home, you will relate to one of the storylines in Fiddler on the Roof. It's being presented by the Rixweil Theater Company in Greenfield. It's 122 Main Street, again, a short drive from Indianapolis. And remaining performances are on Friday, August 7th, and Saturday, August 8th, so wrapping up this weekend. Great fun, family-friendly, appropriate for kids, and you can slip a little history lesson into the kids after they've seen Fiddler on the Roof.
If I were a rich man.
That's right.
Yeah, da, da, da. Hey, some other gallery openings.
I know. It's infectious.
So hard. Some other great gallery openings going on this weekend. At Big Car Gallery down in Fountain Square on Virginia Avenue, Heart Attack, new work by Cindy Hynant. This is work that's heart-related, so drawings and collaborative work and exploring themes of love, loss, obsession, and desire, and hearts. In fact, the Heartland Insecurity is the title of the piece. It's an installation that's made in collaboration with employees of Homeland Security. How clever is that?
Mm.
There's also paper cuts, because I guess the heart gets, I don't know, the heart's a fragile object. Anyways, it's Heart Attack at the Big Car Gallery down in Fountain Square.
I have no idea how to get from that to a Bad Hair Day festival.
You could take a cab, I suppose.
Okay. In Columbus, Indiana, I don't know where this idea came from, but I love it. When temperatures, well, here's part of it. When temperatures climb and humidity rises, every hair day is a bad hair day. If your hair is frizzy and out of control, your style is wilted, you can take part in the Columbus, Indiana Bad Hair Festival. It is going on, I'm not making this up. See, Travis can vouch for me.
Of course you're not. No,
There's information here. Friday, August 21st, Saturday, August 22nd, on Friday evening, 5:30 to 8. It's a downtown strolling night, special happenings in downtown retail shops and restaurants. At 9 o'clock on Friday night, you can go to the Yes Cinema and see Hairspray and sing along to the karaoke version of the hit movie. Uh-huh. And then on Saturday, there's a farmer's market on the square in the morning. At noon, you can register for the Bad Hair Day competition. The Bad Hair Day judging is at 1 o'clock. And then Rock the Park with Blues Traveler and the Elms in Mill Race Park at 7 o'clock on Saturday night, August 22nd.
Cool.
And you don't have to have any kind of particular hairstyle. So, Bad Hair Day weekend in Columbus, Indiana.
There's a lot of neat events coming up actually on Mass Avenue in the next week. One of them is the Longest Dinner, which supports the Cultural Trail, and it's going to be on Thursday night. And this sold out very quickly last year, so you need to get your tickets soon. It's a dinner that includes slow food style food with indie fringe buskers who are entertaining, as well as live music. It's a nice way of sort of bringing together the fringe and the Cultural Trail. Again, that's Thursday the 13th. Get more information at indiefringe.org. The Fringe is starting up soon. But also coming up next weekend is the Mass Ave Criterium, which is a bicycle race presented by Nuvo and is being held on Saturday from 8 until 2 p.m. All along and up and down Mass Avenue. It's a big bike race, so go down there and check out the bikers.
With your bad hair.
With your bad hair.
And your deep fried food.
Yep.
It's not all connected, is it? Hey, you have a few weeks remaining if you are a creative person who would like to design a handbag. Why would you do such a thing, you're saying?
I don't know
to me?
Why, Sharon.
Because, and you've heard about this on The Art of the Matter in the past, there's a program called Bags to Riches. It benefits a program called Trusted Mentors, which matches volunteer mentors with families and individuals in homeless prevention programs. And they auction off these handbags, and some of them are extraordinarily creative. You can get more information. The deadline for entry is August 20th, and you can get more information at bags2richesindy.org, and the 2 is the numeral 2, so bags2richesindy.org. So check that out and design something amazing, and maybe I'll be the winning bidder on the bag you design.
And maybe you could have it on exhibit next year at the State Fair.
I love it.
There you go.
Make
and
it big. I can carry fried
lots
food.
Lots of fried
food.
Yeah, plastic lined. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be back with more ways to enjoy yourself at the State Fair and around town next week on
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Shows, 6 stages, comedy, cabaret, dance, drama, magic, opera, storytelling, and vaudeville, all uncensored, and all for $10 a show. It's the 5th annual Indie Fringe Theater Festival taking place on Mass Ave from August 21st through the 30th. Travis DiNicola spoke with Fringe director Pauline Moffat about this year's Fringe.
It's what the Fringe Festival is. It's cutting-edge theater that you won't see in your traditional theater because it's a little bit of a risk-taking exercise.
And it is all over the place, both physically and metaphorically. I mean, metaphorically, as you said, I mean, you've got theater that's appropriate for kids being put on by young actors in their teens. You've also got all types of, you know, very more adult-themed pieces, more traditional theater, dance, vaudeville. Nashville. And it's a mix of both local performers from Indianapolis as well as from around the state. And then also you've got performers I know from Chicago and other cities around the country.
And it was so interesting because when I opened the entries, and they are first in best dressed, the entries were from around the U.S., people who had heard through the word of mouth of the global fringe movement that Indie Fringe is a very welcoming city, that they have great audiences, and that, you know, it's a really enjoyable experience for those performers. And so we had some of our performers like Phil the Void and Dan Burnett and Les Kirkenstall already, you know, saying, well, we're making a choice. The economy is not good. Do we take a risk and go to Canada and do the fringe circuit, or do we go to Indianapolis when we know we've started to build an audience and we have friends and we love to be there because it's about being accepted and people really enjoy and vote by buying tickets.
It's important to note, too, that this is part of a there is a fringe circuit. I mean, fringe
is huge
all over the world. I mean, whether it's in Canada or Scotland where it began, or in Australia or other places around the United States, there are, you know, other fringe festivals, and
many
of these performers, you know, tour that whole circuit.
They do tour, and the interesting thing about our festival is because we're only 5 years old that we are still first in best dressed, whereas in Canada you have to become part of a lottery. So you have to wait and see.
And when you say first in best dress, it's
basically literally by the date of the postmark on your envelope.
Application in first gets in.
So we don't choose who comes. They know. Get in. Get that application in, and you'll be secured a spot. Whereas they could be waiting for months to find out whether they're in, say, the Edmonton Fringe or the Toronto Fringe. So in that sense, I think Indianapolis, with its fabulous approach to the fringe, has made it a very welcoming place.
You know, I want to give people a sense of what a fringe performance can be, and I know that's a hard thing. I mean, even in your program, there's sort of a question and answer thing of the fringe. You know, can you recommend a favorite? And you say nope, but certainly. Ask people who, have seen shows. I was trying to go through, and I've been to the Fringe every year since it's begun, and I was trying to go through the very large program. How many shows are different shows?
Well, there are 53
performing groups. Okay. Mm-hmm. And throughout the period of the Fringe, I was trying to find a few that seemed to me representative of the idea of Fringe, and one is a production called Murder Hope from New York City. And part of the description of it is that it's a nonlinear piece incorporating Appalachian murder ballads, Batman YouTube, and the musical Saw. Right there, it's just sort of like, it can be anything.
It can be anything. Well, we have our first opera, and this is a professor of music at St. Joseph College in Indiana. And this is his first fringe, and I think it's his first attempt at theatre outside the college circuit.
Mm-hmm.
So not only do we have him entering, we're teaching him the marketing skills to be able to promote his show. So that, again, is, a fascinating part of what we do, because we are the umbrella. We provide the marketing and the promotion, and we provide the venues and the staffing, so that then they're left, those performers, to do their very best job.
And it's not unusual to see performers out on the streets handing out postcards and saying, hey, come to my show, come to my show.
And that's right. And to take a conservative music professor and say, no, I want you to be up and down that street dressed in your costume, handing out. He's going, what do I have to do?
It's important for them because all the performers keep all the money from the door.
They do. We give them 100% of their box office back. So the harder they market their show, the more return they get.
Mm-hmm.
But I must say that the Fringe Circuit is so friendly that, say, a person like Les Kirkenstall will take a Paul Geraci and say, come with me. I will show you how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the nice part.
One thing that's really fun is I think in every show that I've been to at the Fringe, I always see other Fringe performers in the audience. It seems that it's very important for each of the performers, when they're not doing their shows, they want to go see what other people are doing, too.
They do. And, the place they like to go, really, is Fringe Next, because the works are original and they are so fresh.
Yeah.
And you will always find them hanging out at Fringe Next, checking out what these kids' thoughts processes are, because this is the voice of youth. This is them talking about, their issues and the things they want to get over to their friends. So it's great. But, yes, they love to see what the influences are from around the country, mm-hmm. particularly our local performers, and it's helped them a lot in terms of what they choose to put on, how they then market their shows, their techniques mm-hmm. are getting better all the time.
You know, there's some great local performers that, of course, returning, like Taylor Martin's Indies, Andrea Merlin Magician.
Well, what would the Fringe be without Taylor?
Exactly.
I mean, he is part and parcel of the whole process. He always credits the Fringe with kickstarting his career 5 mm-hmm. years ago. He now has his own, you know, monthly magic show, and is always a delight to have around.
Yes, he is. And then you've also got some dance companies, local, like Modus and
some other
groups.
We are so thrilled with our dancers. We are the only Fringe outside of Toronto that really does have a huge dance program.
Mm-hmm.
And this year it'll be at the Earth House, which is one of our new venues. That's on the corner of Eastern Ohio Street. They mm-hmm. have converted their sanctuary into a dance studio just for the festival.
So all the dance will be taking place
all
down
dance
there.
Will okay. be there. In fact, this year we have a pretty interesting program because all dance will take place down there because of the specific needs of dance
sure.
and the dance floor, the Mali floors. And then over at the Phoenix, we're doing storytelling because okay. we have an exceptional storytellers coming from all over the country. They are storytellers and they're one-man shows, but nevertheless, it's a nice venue mm-hmm. and a very intimate venue for that genre. So, and then, of course, at Comedy Sports, we have the outrageous, completely outrageous, fabulous, fun people. And, of course, one of the thrills this year is that Ron Spencer has moved at the Theatre on the Square from a landlord to a performer. So he will not only host the Fringe in the mm-hmm. theatre, but they have entered 2 shows in the Fringe.
Oh, that's great.
At which Ron is starring in one.
Very fun.
Mr. Charles, which should be outrageous, and America's Next Top Bottom.
Now, and again, all of this is up and down Mass Avenue. You mentioned, of course, Earth House is just a little bit off Mass Avenue, but it's a great event that with you have people, you know, walking up and down to the restaurants and the shops and the bars. And then also this year, one thing in addition to having stages at Earth House and Theater on the Square, Comedy Sports, Phoenix, you also you have an Indie Fringe building now, which is just a little bit east of College on Mass Ave. Congratulations.
Thank you. This has been a work in progress since the last Fringe. We've, you know, thanks to some wonderful funders, Alan Whitehall Clues, Nina Mason Pulliam Trust, and LISC facade grants, we've been able to turn that building from a wreck, put a new roof on, new windows, new doors, this week air conditioning, floors done, new stage, lighting. And the whole time this has been happening, it's actually been a work in progress with people performing on the stage, booked out solidly since January through to June. So
yeah,
we
you've
love
had a lot
our
of different
building.
Events. Well, I saw the the cat band, the performing feline
from Chicago.
Chicago, and they're coming back, right?
They're coming back. Indianapolis loved that cat lady.
No, that's not part of the regular Fringe. They're coming back in September.
They're coming back in
the
September.
The Acro Cats.
And we have a wonderful show, Mr. Fry, all of October.
So there are many events beyond just what happens during the time of Fringe, which again is from August 21st through the 30th. And then before then, I mean, there's the world's longest dinner, and then there's other outdoor mm-hmm. events. And
we have a wonderful outdoor stage lineup, which is programmed, the Jazz Festival are programming one night, Nouveau a couple of nights,
mm-hmm.
Fringe a couple of nights. There will be something for everyone. Hoagland's will be providing fabulous food. We'll have great wines and beers. Blue Moon are a sponsor, Envy Wines. So it will be a total experience where you can go and just relax between shows and get, you know, something to eat other than at all the restaurants and bars on Mass Ave, who mm-hmm. will do special menus so that you, if you don't have a lot of time, they'll accommodate that need so you can get to as many shows as you like.
Right, yeah, all the businesses are very aware of that. And, you know, one thing that's a lot of fun is to go down there sometimes not even knowing what shows you're going to go to, because you could go see 3 or 4 in an evening uh-huh. if you, you know, wanted to, and also, you know, grab something to eat or see a number of shows over a couple of days. One thing that I do want to explain, Pauline, is that people can get tickets at the door essentially for each of these performances, but they need to have a button.
The button is very confusing for everyone. Well, the The backer button is the only income to the festival during those
These are pins. Pins that feature sort of the Indie Fringe logo and an image on the poster.
And this year they're very cute. They're performers from past years.
Cool.
And they're little people. So you can buy a top or a bottom, or you can mix and match, which is going to make some interesting mixes and matches. But that is our only income because we give 100% of the box office back to the performer.
But you got to buy the button first to be able to
buy the
tickets.
Before you buy a ticket, but the button is good for then the whole the 10 whole days and you never have to
And they're only, what,
$3? They're $3. The price has never gone up.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a theory, $3 button, $3 beer, $3 glass of wine, and then we've got you. You're captive.
Hey, I want to ask about a couple other shows, and again, there's so many that we can't name them all, and that people just need to get a copy of the program that lists them all. But one that I saw that intrigued me is 7x1 Samurai.
Oh, this man is amazing. He's been named best performer in the DC Fringe, the Cincinnati Fringe, and the Orlando Fringe. Now, this man has studied with some of the great masters in Europe in mime and physical theater and comedy, so it's pretty extraordinary for us to be able to get him, and I'm absolutely delighted. And I think where we've had shows like The Honeymoon Suite and The Birdman, this mm-hmm. will bring a whole new influence to our Fringe Festival, and I think he will be a very exciting show to see.
One show that I got to see last year that I want to mention because I think it's such a perfect show for families is Blunder Construction. And the gentleman who performs that, Brent McCoy from Vermont, is just about it's one of the sweetest shows I've ever seen. And it is sort of like a slapstick mime type mm-hmm. of show. But just, I went to it one afternoon and there were a lot of kids in the audience and they were just squealing in delight. And at the same time, the parents were just laughing hysterically.
You know, he's a delightful young man. He and his wife, was girlfriend, now wife. That's how many years it's been coming, all of three. He is a delight, and you'll see him walking around town, you know, dressed in his Blunder Construction outfit with his little hard hat, which, of course, fits perfectly with the cultural trail being constructed on Mass Avenue this year.
Yeah, he looks sort of like a very theatrical construction worker.
He does. Mm-hmm. That's exactly. And they may be very confused, all those workers. But he's great fun. He'll stop and talk to you. He'll juggle with the kids. He'll do a few tricks. He's everywhere, constantly over those 10 days. And his show is wonderful for families, just adorable.
Yeah, and I'm not giving times for all these because pretty much most of the shows occur 5-6 times at different times. They're always at each one's at one specific theater. For example, Blunder Construction will be at Theater on the Square on the main stage, but the performances are some at 6, some at 1:30, some at 9, some at 10:30, sort of all over the place throughout the 10 days.
It's true, and we've got a ready reckoner of a calendar in the Nouveau program, which will come out mm-hmm. on August the 5th, and it's all color-coded, so you're able to actually plan your
Travis show. DiNicolo with Pauline Moffitt, the director of the Indie Fringe Theater Festival. It takes place on Mass Ave from August 21st through the 30th. More information is available at, you guessed it, IndieFringe.org, IndieFringe.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4 p.m. I'll get a preview of the Mahler Project.
And I'll take a look at the upcoming art exhibit, Emberwood Myths. And, of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 for The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter is made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by grants from the Arts Council of Indianapolis and from the City of Indianapolis and by support from the Central Indiana Community Foundation, the Indiana Arts Commission, a state agency, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.